Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 62. I'm a feminist, but... Maybe you've heard the beginning of this sentence before. If not, allow me to nod in the direction of the Guilty Feminist podcast, and I'll leave you to have a little listen. Ironically, I'm not really into podcasts. Susie and my boss are, though, and Phoebe really is. To be honest, I only listen to The Guilty Feminist to keep Phoebe happy. She'll only tell me what happened in it anyway, so I might as well be able to have a conversation about it. It is a cracking show, to be fair, and I love the angle. Feminism shouldn't be another thing that we have to feel guilty about, and the host, Deborah, takes a mick out of herself quite a lot. So what you get is things like, I'm a feminist, but I untagged a photo of myself at a women's conference standing in front of a sign that says empowered, not coward, because my ankles looked fat. Or this one, I'm a feminist, but once I went on a women's rights march, popped into a department store to use the loo, got distracted by trying out face creams, and when I came out, the march was gone. If you change that out to trainers, bags or coats, I very much relate. I'm here for this kind of honesty. And in that spirit, let me say, I'm a feminist, but when I need to move house, I borrow Phoebe's boyfriend, Marco, because muscles. And don't forget, moving is always a family affair. Mum and Dad are on their way too. Marco and I get started early doors, because first up, we've got to go and get half of my stuff, which I've been storing at work. There are a few upsides to having a warehouse job, you know. Phoebe arrives mid-van loading to give Marco freshly baked banana bread. These two are pretty fucking cute sometimes, you know. All the moving parties converge on my new abode at the same time. God knows how I'm in my late 30s and still in need of parental approval, but I'm holding my breath as they take a look around my new flat. My uncle has also come to lend a hand and, to be honest, to palm off some of his old furniture on me. I could be moving into the Ritz and my uncle would still have jokes. But the good news is my dad is in town. And like father, like daughter, we both have exactly the same itinerary in mind for the day. Marco and I will keep bringing the stuff from the old place, while my dad and my uncle build all the furniture again. In between loads, I'm keeping an eye on the good old Facebook marketplace, because my arse and my flat is in need of a sofa. Or even just a chair at this point. Because when this day ends, all I've got is a mattress to sit on. It's a Saturday. I just need one person to decide that today is the day that the sofa needs to go. I scroll through and okay, maybe I need more than one person because that floral covered sofa is so ugly I refuse to carry it up the stairs into my new flat. On the last trip back to the old place, Marco mentions how absent Shane has been. Oh, it's a relief to be honest, not having to deal with him hovering about as we bust our arses shifting stuff about. I give one last check around the room and I have left it exactly as I found it a year ago. And it did its job. I'm back in town, I'm back on my feet. But as I climb in the van and take one last look at the gate in the wing mirror, I'm really not sorry to be moving on. There's no pang of, oh no, what am I doing? I am ready for the new place. And everything is now in the new flat and my beautiful dad has built my bed frame first. I love the way his mind works. Now, no matter what state the rest of the place is in come the end of the night, I will be able to crawl into my bed. Up and down the stairs, Marco and I go, fetching bags and boxes. We stop for a break, I check my phone. I've sent like a million messages and I'm hoping somebody gets back to me about a sofa. For a bunch of people who wrote must be gone today on their adverts, my inbox is surprisingly quiet. I widen my search area now we've done the majority of the move. We've got a bit of time on our hands. We could go a little further afield. Oh, what's this? A new listing. Bright red sofa. I think I kind of like it, you know. And it's not exactly like I've got a colour scheme to be worried about right now. Most of my furniture is black. Sorry, IKEA, I mean black-brown. I reckon I can get away with it. Looks in pretty good nick too. Better than the colour though is the price. 15 whole pounds. I asked Marco for his opinion. Mum and Dad don't poo-poo it and the seller responds immediately. So we jump back in the van and off we go to collect it. It's only 5 minutes across town, but it is on a one-way street, completely lined with parked cars. So we do a lap and abandon the van a ways up the road. Let's go check it out and get it into the street before we bring the van round, I say to Marco. That way I figure I'm only going to block the street for a minute or two. It's a tidy looking terrace house. I knock the front door and Hugh Grant's floppy head blonde younger brother answers. The middle of a hot Saturday afternoon and Henry here is immaculate. Sky blue shirt still looking freshly pressed, tucked into his incredibly smart jeans and a pair of boat shoes that look like the softest leather you'd ever wear. And he smells divine. It is no surprise to me that he's the fella in charge of the new estate agency in town. The kind of estate agency whose houses I only look at when I've purchased a lottery ticket. I'm already impressed and a little bit in love with old Henry here. And then we walk around his incredibly well-decorated and well-styled house. Not one room, alcove or space was unworthy of an interior design magazine. Henry, or his designer, had snuck up on every cliche of a bachelor pad and turned them into some sort of iconic moment. From the mid-century modern chairs next to the drinks trolley through to the clean lines of the kitchen that still retain the warmth of the heart of the house somehow. Your eyes fall to the conservatory and his tidy little workspace out there, complete with a gorgeous espresso cup, sat at a jaunty angle, abandoned when he'd opened the door to us. Sweaty, scruffy, us. Emery leads us upstairs to the sofa, and I drink in every delicious detail of his house. Of course, Henry's a gentleman, and regardless of whether I look like a massive lesbian right now, he will not be letting me assist with the lifting of the sofa. This might be the first time chivalry from a fella has made me almost want to lean into a swoon. An even better upside of this whole thing is it has left me trapped up here while they negotiate the staircase, sofa in hand. And you best bet I am having a proper nose round. He's reclaimed the floorboards in the front bedroom, left them bare, beautiful colour varnish. It's a monochrome colour scheme, and from the bed frame to the lamps, fuck it, I love the whole thing. The bathroom and the ensuite, spotless, classic, gorgeous, metro tiles, of course. And the spare room the sofa's come from, essentially, is Henry's dressing room slash closet. His watch collection, his trainer collection, his coats, his suits. The more I see, the more envious I get. Thankfully, the lads were now downstairs and I had to tear my jealous eyes away from all of this beautiful stuff that Henry has. I go off, grab the van and I pull up. We throw the sofa in with ease. We shake hands and look somewhat adoringly at Henry as we say our goodbyes. Trundling through the busy streets, Marco and I are silent. I glance over my shoulder at the bargain of a sofa in the back, but I can't stop thinking about a handsome Henry. Now, if that's the one special man that God apparently has in mind for me, then I could possibly, maybe, entertain it if he shares his wardrobe with me, at the very least. But mostly, I fucking want to be a Henry. I want to live in a place so well appointed, even a gold star like me is thinking twice about dropping her panties. I look at Marco and he reads my mind. I know, right? He was a handsome man. I'm nodding. Marco is not wrong. And that house, I say. We're still listing our points of envy as we lug the sofa up the stairs into my new place. This poor sofa, slumming it now in its less salubrious home. Bless it. As Marco and I drop it in the living room, I'm amazed by the transformation since we popped out to pick this bugger up. The bed is built. There's fresh sheets on it. Every room now has curtains, tea towels, dusters, cleaning things for the kitchen. Mum has thought through all of the little things I'm going to need and she's brought them with her. And she talks me through one sensible thing after another. Stuff I kind of know but can't really be asked to do most of the time. I can't help but think of the fact that I've got friends with like 3 kids, a house and a husband at this point in their lives. They don't need their mum to bring baking trays and silicone spoons. And let's be honest, I didn't even know that we were supposed to be using silicone spoons right now. I mean, I'm still not entirely sure what the issue is with the wooden one. something about bacteria. But listen, if she's thrown them all out and bought me a new set, I'm not going to argue with it. I'm sure at some point I'd have worked it all out. I can't say I'd have been rushing out for new utensils, but, you know, I'd have figured it. My dad's got Marco holding things as he puts them together, and my uncle has managed not to be a complete pain in the bum, and his furniture donations are actually working very nicely in the flat. There's only one way to thank this lot, and that is to feed them. Now, clearly, I'm not making a mess in my new kitchen. They're going to get a big old bucket of KFC, and they'll like it. And I do mean big. Marco works out a lot, hence the muscles, hence me borrowing him. And I'm starting to think that this boy is related to hobbits. There's always a minimum of 2 breakfasts for this lad. To be honest with you, I often ask Phoebe how they afford the food bill. But considering Marco does all the cooking, she does stay pretty quiet about it, which is very smart. Don't bite the hand that cooks for you and all that. Once everyone's fed and well thanked, they start to leave. Marco needs to get home for his actual dinner now, and Mum and Dad have got a 4-hour drive ahead of them. My uncle drives like a lunatic, so he usually gets home quicker than he should. I'm always glad when he's passenger free, like on occasion like this. If you're a passenger, you're going to want a sick bag or a blindfold. With them all gone, I finally close my front door. I walk down the hallway and I pause at the bedroom door and look at the space in there. I mean, the living room is rammed with stuff and my Billy bookcase stands empty because I've gone and lost all the bloody shelf fittings, haven't I? But still, it's all livable right now. No need to do much more tonight. I've got to put my feet up on my new sofa. I only sit here for a minute or two because I can't help but get up and wander around the flat again. All this space, just for me. I'm waiting on someone else to get out of the bathroom and wondering what you're going to be walking into. No unexpected mess in the kitchen. No one to have to make conversation with when I just want to sit on the sofa and watch TV. My life isn't contained to one room. I won't have to sleep with all my wet clothes hanging around the room like I'm running a back street laundry. But best of all, I'm never going to stand outside and wonder if it's safe to go in. No sitting on the doorstep or up the street summoning the courage up to face whatever situation's inside. Something awful happens now. I can run home, I can fumble with my keys in the door and I can close it behind me. I can lock the world out. And suddenly my shoulders are dropping. I'm more tired than I've been in a really long time. My first night in my own place, I slept like a baby, safe and sound. The next couple of evenings consist entirely of moving things from one room to the other and then sometimes back again. At some point I'm going to have to accept the fact that I'm a way off replicating the sophistication of Henry's place. But I am way above student level, the mostly matching furniture, not a blue tack poster in sight, art on actual canvases hangs on the walls. I found a home for a good deal of my stuff, but the rest is going to have to wait because it is time for my glorious return to the British Roller Derby Championships. And I have totally upgraded my accommodation this year. No murder house for me this time. I have booked myself an actual hotel. Oh, don't you just love those days where you get to knock off early on a Friday to bugger off and do something fun? It may well be one of my favourite feelings. And I am singing, out of tune, of course, all the way up the motorway. The announcer crew is stacked with talent again this year. And while I'm riding high enough to annoy the likes of Marvin, I'm curious where I'm actually going to fall in the pecking order this year. All right, pecking order is probably a bit strong, but be under no illusion, announcers want to win too. Like the final, we want to be calling that. But it's not just about getting to call the game. It's where you get to call the game. Are you the in-house announcer, down on the floor, up close and personal with the action, relaying the nuances of that rolling mess of the crowd around you? Or are you a live stream announcer, taking advantage of replays and timeouts to analyse the strategy? And not all of us have the same definition of a win. For me, I want to be on the live stream. It's more pressure, but I love being able to talk about every aspect of the game unfolding in front of me. Weirdly, I feel like there's more freedom on a live stream. That is, if I can avoid saying fuck or bugger or using any outdated offensive language. Because Twitter will come for you. And let me clarify, I'm more than okay with being held accountable by fans. I just don't really want to cock it up in the first place. Because language is important. But I find it especially so when it comes to our skaters. I know how awful it feels to work incredibly hard and achieve something only for somebody to say my name in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable. The only upside is a simple name. At least I don't have to hear somebody butcher the pronunciation on top of that. So it's pretty important to me that I make every effort to get everyone's names right. And all right, yes, sometimes I do just want them to explain their derby name to me. Right along with getting names correct, pronouns are important too. Gotta say, doesn't mean I wasn't a dick about them as I got my head around it all. I wasn't a dick out loud, obviously, but the whole thing bothered me. It was that usual bollocks, you know, the same old excuses you hear everybody else trot out, using they as a singular, you know, and then you find out that Shakespeare did it, and my English teacher, she had it bad for old Shakespeare. Having to make an effort to use the right pronouns is hardly more of an effort than me learning the name, the skater number, and the season stats of a player. And aside from having to momentarily think about it more until it sticks, it doesn't affect me at all. Except sometimes it felt like it did, because it didn't make sense to me. And I like things that make sense, we all do. I've no idea where or when I'd noticed, but one day I'd noticed. It was jealousy. Some part of me was jealous, resentful maybe. Oh right, so now we respect people's choice of name. All right, yeah, where was this for me? All right, now we have this language. I mean, come on, it was just stupid, ugly jealousy underneath it all. You can intellectualise all you like, but at the core, that's what it was. Like one of these people right now who paid for college and now deems it only fair that everyone else should have to pay up. I felt suffocated by language, so now you should too. Ugh, ugly, ugly way to think or be. Once I knew why I was being a dick about it, albeit quietly, in my head, I started to get over myself. And you know what? It's not that hard to adapt, is it? Though I do have one caveat. They beg you, on behalf of butches and masks and my gender non-conforming friends everywhere, please don't use they, them for us as a default. In fact, top tip, if you're unsure, please ask people their pronouns. But before you do, just check that you're not going to ask the only gender non-conforming person in the room. Ask everyone or no one. I digress, but this kind of stuff is racing through my mind as I leave the crew meeting. If I'm completely honest with you, I just have one goal for this championships. And that's if the BBC attend again this year, I want to be calling one of those games. Everyone reckons the Beeb will be here. I bloody hope so. I figure if I can get one of the finals that's going out on the stream, I'll be over the moon. I mean, to be honest with you, who am I kidding? If I get selected for any game on the BBC, I will be buzzing. My finest form, that is what I need to be on tomorrow, which means it's time to get to that hotel and get a decent night's kip. I'm not expecting the hotel paradise, I didn't stretch the budget that far. But it does look quite decent, at least from out here in the car park. It's a rainy Friday night in Stoke as I hurry into the lobby. Glasses are off and it's three different attempts to draw my lenses, untucking various layers of my outfit. Which means right now everything is blurry as fuck. The floor is very white, bouncing light up in all sorts of angles. Maybe it's the rain. Maybe it's the impression of dark wood all around, but it looks and feels sort of cosy to my unfocused eyes. And then I put my glasses back on. Oh, I'd take those back off. That white tiled floor? Hit or miss. Someone has wisely trained the spots on the uncracked tiles. I see what you've done there. The wood panelling I had seen, just a painted illusion that likely only works if your eyesight is as bad as mine. The rest of the lobby is a graveyard for black leather sofas. From far and wide, these insanely comfortable but battered to hell sofas have come together for one last sit down. Too cold in the winter, too hot in the summer, with a brutal recliner function, they have found their last home. A pile of newspapers has accumulated on the ridiculously ornate coffee table. The sheer number of copies of The Sun in a pile makes me a little uncomfy. But this hotel has the perfect distraction, unleashed just as you start to wonder if you should get your phone out and look on one of those last minute websites. Normally, a hotel receptionist is the last person you want to be a chaotic neutral, but not tonight. The check-in process is unnervingly led by me. Upside, during our chat about her GCSE results from 6 years ago, she forgets to put a hold on my card. This is very helpful. By the time the two of us have figured out how to create me a new room key, we've also covered off her top three pizza toppings, her top three hair dye colours, her top three favourite dogs, and we've settled on a top five for her favourite films. The final round was a tour of her piercings and tattoos. Let's just say it was clear she favoured spontaneity over sentimentality. I'm almost out of the lobby at long last when a huge builder lad stumbles in. Is 3 sheets to the wind, maybe 6, and demanding attention. We both look over at him. He's drunk, he's annoyed, and he is demanding. This is the perfect chance to slip away from the lovely yet intense receptionist. But I also feel like my general presence in the vicinity may be helpful right now. Don't get me wrong, I have absolutely no doubt that this woman can handle herself. This is definitely not her first rodeo. I just don't exactly trust that the CCTV is working in a hotel like this. I'm no hero, but witness. Witness I can do. I drop my bag down and I just perch on the edge of the sofa. She looks back as she notices that I haven't opened the noisy double doors that lead through to the bedrooms. Ah, you go on up. Gary's no trouble. You'll want to get moving, though. That's his drunk nap sofa you're sitting on. Of course it's Gary's nap sofa, I think, as I get up. Gary is now only upright thanks to the reception desk. Okay, upright is strong. He's just sort of draped over it. High-vis still on, work trousers clinging on at the apex of his arse. Those are the saddest pair of boxers I've ever seen in my life. The underwear equivalent of that living room your nan smoked in for 30 years. As long as you're sure you're good, I say. Sure I am, hun. You're a teddy bear, really, aren't you, Gary? Guessing we're going to take that belch as a yes from Gary. The chaotic neutral and her teddy bear behind me, I wind myself through a mishmash of corridors. The deeper I go, the weirder the carpet gets. They have clearly cleared out every charity shop and car boot sale to create this art gallery that's going on. Just let it be clean. It's all I need. Like if I could get 3 wishes right now, make my mattress vaguely comfortable, give me good water pressure in the shower, and let it be clean. I'd rub that lamp I just passed if I didn't think it would take the finish off. Room 126, here we are. Deep breath, key and door, and we're in. If I don't look at anything directly for longer than a few seconds, this place is pretty decent. We're just going to ignore those stains on the carpet that look suspiciously like blood. As I brush my teeth, I have to step out of the bathroom and take in the headboards once more. I can't help but be impressed by the wearing away of the pleather headboards on both single beds in the room. I mean, single beds. I tell you, impressive. The saving grace of this room, the bathroom is pretty clean. I mean, they do get minus points for the manky shower curtain that looks like it'll be all over me like Norman Bates tomorrow morning. The bed will do, especially when you consider the amount of action the headboard implies it's seen. Obviously, I'm trying not to think about that. I won't lie to you, I'm mostly dreaming about getting my 3rd wish of a damn good shower tomorrow morning. Night one was actually a success. I stayed sexy, I didn't get murdered. I pop out for a smoke and discover that the morning receptionist is appropriately chill for the time of day. I check my game schedule for the day. What am I up to? Stream, house, stream. Tidy. Our final game is one I really wanted to work. Because you see, one of the teams is a complete mystery to me. Their reputation and quality has kept them in the conversation about top teams in the country, even though they've been quiet through what seems to have been a rebuilding period. Honestly, I'm dying to see them in action, see if they live up to it. And I can't lie, their recent rebrand is top notch. We've discussed how shallow I am before, so it's no surprise to you that a cool jersey and damn good merch can sway me in my affections for a team. The first day speeds by, and it's like reunion after reunion. But there are one or two new voices to work with. There's some strong Welsh representation in the crew too. And it was only right that, of course, we worked the North Wales game. Flags were flown, Welsh was spoken. Not by me, unfortunately. All we were really missing was Welsh cakes and a male voice choir to belt out the anthem. Before I know, I am pulling on my headphones and checking how I can hear my producer, my co-host, and that the mute button is working. Stats in hand, it really is anyone's game this evening, according to the numbers. But that's the best thing about sport. It doesn't really matter what it says on paper. It is always anyone's game until a certain point. Today could be your day, on any given Sunday, as they say. I mean, look at them on the benches. Nervous energy demonstrated in like 15 different ways. Right now, those skaters, those players, they are deciding whether they're going to win or lose. If you've trained right, your body is so ready for this moment. It'll do what you want it to do without you asking. It's your mind, especially in these last few minutes. They know we're live, that we're picking at their lineups, that we're talking about the key players both in the game and those they're missing. They know up here on the balcony, we're going to scrutinise their every move, every decision, every strategy choice. They know, but they should not be thinking about that now. I say this as I watch a skater take it all in. God, I hope that works for her as we lock eyes. Me, anything outside of my tunnel, my bubble, would be blurry by now. Track and bench, that's all I'd be seeing. 20 minutes into the game, it was becoming very clear that my mystery team had been worth the intrigue and the wait. By half time they were cruising and you knew they still had a few gears left. Now I like to think of myself as a fair announcer. I mean, that's literally my job. But it is also my job to talk about what's actually happening on track. And well, if your team is getting their asses handed to them, I'm gonna have to talk about it. Does that mean I tell the world your team sucks? No. Well, okay, yes, that is the underlying message, but we say it nicely. After all, you play this bad, somebody's going to make you watch that film back. And probably a lot. So often we will use the kindest euphemism possible. Oh, that was unlucky. 84, just missed a jammer there. The easier thing to do in this situation is to talk about the good stuff you're seeing, which naturally means you end up focusing more on the winning team. Juggling, balancing all the way through an hour of gameplay. That's your job as an announcer. But it can be stop-start, an old roller derby. Teams call timeouts, officials call timeouts, injuries demand a timeout. You can be left with a lot of time to make entertaining small talk with your co-host. Which is why you need a pocket full of opinions, talking points, factual facts and the like to get you through these moments. We get onto the subject of jerseys and I praise the mystery team's rebrand and I talk about a few others that I really admire. Now, some of this might just be a little bitterness left over from the time I tried to convince my old league into a rebrand. It got shot down on the grounds that some folks didn't want to have to buy new hoodies. Maybe I'm not over it. Or maybe I'm just chatting shit because the officials are having a stopwatch crisis that is taking forever to resolve. It's the worst thing about being up here on the broadcast balcony is always hard to know exactly what's going on down there. Our producer is doing their best, but we're just making guesses and speculation can be dodgy ground for an announcer. So we stick to talking about team uniforms. It's a much safer zone. It was a decisive victory by the mystery team and, to be honest with you, a bit of a masterclass. I'm just glad they lived up to my own hype. I wander off for the end of day meeting, gotta find out what the schedule's gonna be. And as wrapped up as I am in my own world, I can't help but notice some tension in the crew. And the source is unexpected, good friends who seem to be at odds. I've definitely missed something here. While I really want the Tier 1 final tomorrow. I looked round the group and the experience in it and I realised it's a long shot. Like, if I was the head announcer, I probably wouldn't pick me. There are some damn fine pairings on offer here. So, we start to run through the schedule. The first two games, I'm going to be the house announcer. Oof, I'm going to need that energy from 9 a.m. tomorrow. Blimey. There are three more games tomorrow afternoon and they are all finals. I don't get the men's final. I mean, I'm not too sad about it, to be honest. But I don't even get a producer role in the Tier 2 final. All right. Well, it's looking like an early finish for me. I mean, actually, this could be an upside. I could be cheeky and get a head start on the trip home. And then Mel is suddenly hugging me and jumping up and down. Oh, she got the Tier 1 final stream. And it is going out on the BBC. All of the finals are. Oh, mate, that is so cool. Mel is great. Like, brilliant. I wonder who they've paired her with. I bet it's Nero. They are so experienced. And those two have a pretty damn good dynamic. Fuck. I am looking at the schedule the head announcer has sent out. I'm working with Mel. On the Tier 1 final. On the BBC. Oh, fuck. This is awesome. Let's get this meeting over with so I can call my mum. Holy shit, I am going to commentate on a women's sport final on the BBC. All right, it's the red button, but still, it's the BBC. Oh, my God, I'm going to need to get all of my swears out tonight. I reckon even my mum might watch this one. Buzzing. I am absolutely buzzing. But not everyone is. Just like skaters, we don't always make the team. And sometimes it's best not to ask why you didn't get picked. I mean, feedback's good, but sometimes you just don't want to know. Because head announcers rarely manage to please everyone. Not to mention, selecting a pair of announcers together isn't exactly a hard science. It's all pretty subjective. For example, take me. Some folks love my style. Some people will mute me the minute my voice reaches their brain. I guess Nero has asked and they weren't all that chuffed with the answer. So much so that I find myself offering up the other bed in my room. I mean, I have added a warning about the bloodstains and the very lived-in look of the headboards, but it seems like anywhere would be better than back at the house share with the head announcer. So Nero and I head back to the hotel, chuck our stuff in the room, and we go out into the gardens to smoke and talk. I get on well with Nero. But tonight's a little awkward, as you can imagine. Most of us kind of expected Nero to get the final, do you know what I mean? I mean, Nero is a walking wealth of roller derby knowledge, men's and women's, across the world. I mean, you name a tournament, Nero has probably worked it. A deadpan commentator who delivers incisive statements, and he's truly funny. And for me, Nero's American accent adds a layer of authenticity almost. It's like a nod to the land where roller derby came from. And I kind of figured that would sound pretty good. Turns out our head announcer was of a different opinion. His British champs on the British Broadcasting Corporation, they felt UK accents were the way to go. What the hell do I say to that? Not to mention I'm the one benefited from this seeming discrimination. Nero is handling it pretty well, you know, aside from fleeing the previous accommodation. We spend the rest of the night sharing stories and I ask a billion questions about everything announcer related. Like mostly how do I get to the big one if Finland goes well. Nero has so much advice, I wasn't sure we were ever going to get to sleep. And then it's finals day. I best be looking good for my TV debut. So glad I packed the Prince of Wales check waistcoat now. One look at the state of the iron in the room means that it's time for a very long and steamy shower. Final result, one very dapper look in me. And the boots and the biker jacket add that extra confidence, which translates unashamedly into my swagger. I'm nervous as fuck, but nobody else needs to know that. The morning is a delight, quite frankly. In-house announcing always feels so much more relaxed to me. And I was in great company too. Now I've got a lovely two-game break on my hands. Check a little bit of Tinder. Still as dry as a Californian forest. I'm not entirely sure what I was expecting in Stoke-on-Trent, but you know, something would have done. As I tried to get my phone back into my tight black jeans, I realised our head announcer is hanging out the door, trying to get my attention. So I head out into the corridor where we can talk without disturbing the broadcast. Serious face. Uh-oh. As gently as possible, I'm informed that the mystery team's opposition last night, you know, the ones who got a spanking, have complained that I was biased during my commentary. Oh, come on, the game was biased. And to be fair, I am allowed to think that their kit is better. That's my defence, you know, once I've heard the nature of the complaint. While I'd been announcing this morning, there had been a short investigation, and no action would apparently be taken. I had the full support of my head announcer. They just wanted to let me know that, you know, heads up, some people are moaning. And I appreciate the warning, because those folks, they have the right to their opinions, like I have the right to mine. So we'll just let them moan. All I've got to do now is not let it bother me. That's the advice from everyone, and to myself, it's a fair shout. I absolutely want to do a cracking job later. Being annoyed won't help. Many folk might have a cup of tea right about now. Me, I'll go for a smoke. Everyone who is not working a game right now is out here. I relay my feedback to the group and I ask what everyone thinks. And usually, one of the crew had been watching back at their hotel. And they said, bollocks, no bias at all. In fact, the general consensus from the group was, fuck him, sore losers. I mean, honestly, they had me laughing about it by the time we scattered to take our places for the next game. One more hour to go. The nerves are building. I'm excited too. Somehow this hour drags and evaporates at the same time. I take one last nervous wee. I'm washing my hands and I look in the mirror. My butch self is about to go on TV. A national broadcast. My authentic, unapologetic self. Getting to put words to the awesomeness of the women out on track. This evening, there'll be a little girl sitting on a sofa somewhere, realising that she wants to be a jammer. She wants someone like me screaming in delight at the play she just made. She will look at the different types of women on the track and realise her body is powerful, whatever version she has. She will know that she can play her heart out, not in an empty hall, not tucked away somewhere where nobody can see her, but in front of an ever-growing audience who will roar her on. And one or two might realise that they too can be a witty, well-dressed butch. My co-host is a delight, an absolute wonder. We work so well together. Her mum, not so much. We get a text at half-time. I tell you, I thought she sounded like Sue Perkins. Then blow me, there you both were on screen. And she even looks like her. I've called my co-host Mel ever since. The second half was brilliant. The momentum shifted back and forth, but the mystery team turned it on at the exact right time. Closed out the game beautifully. From there, we were into trophies and awards. Everything's done and now it's clean up and break down. Everyone starts to drift off. It takes forever to make sure you say goodbye to everyone. Endless hugs. But I am so ready for my own bed. And, you know, carpet with a lack of suspicious stains. I can't believe the next time I call a game, it'll be in Helsinki. Hello. Thank you for your patience, you absolute beauts. Though I am hoping Pride Month has been keeping you busy. I mean, all it is rainbows everywhere. To be honest, Pride is kind of just getting started in the UK. It was Glasgow last week, and it's London as I write. In fact, the 50th year of London Pride. I can barely believe that Pride was only 10 when I was born. There's Manchester, Brighton, and many more to come. If you are Pride inclined, I hope you get to party or protest or parade as you want to. Especially now, when it's important to know that there are other people out there who think like you, who feel like you. People who will fight for everyone's rights. Because I think if we're honest, we've all got a lot more fights coming our way. So I want you to make sure you're looking after yourself. Don't watch too much news. Don't get stuck in that doom scrolling. Make sure you do stuff that makes you happy and fills your heart with joy. Thank you, as always, for the privilege of your time. I'll see you soon. Oh, bugger. I forgot all the obligatory stuff. Rate or review the show, pretty please. Thanks. It really helps. Oh, if you have loved the show and you want to show your love, I do accept credit cards. Please head to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/well-established-lesbian, to leave a tip, donation, or subscribe. I think that's everything. Okay, now I'm done. Laters, everyone.